Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hello, dear listener, and welcome back to Owning It, the Anxiety Podcast with me, Caroline Foran. For this episode, we are delving into a topic that you might not have heard before, might sound a little bit bizarre or jarring, and it's happiness anxiety. I think it's something, well, I've definitely felt it. I've known a lot of people who felt it too. And it's the fear that when things are going good and when you're happy and when everything's coming up roses, the fear that something will go wrong or that you don't deserve it or that something terrible is going to happen. For this episode, I'm joined again by Dr. Mally Coyne, who is a clinical psychologist and a best-selling author who I've had on numerous times, I think now. She also was a very big part of my first book, Owning It. So you'll know her name from that. And she provides the expert insight here for me. So we kind of unpack what is happiness anxiety. It actually has a name, cherophobia. Sounds like something, a fear of cherries. It's not that at all. And we talk about, yeah, how to maybe address that. And especially when it comes to relationships where people might have a self-destruct button and a fear of things not working out. So they protect themselves by making that happen before it can happen to them. So if any of this sounds relative to you or familiar, I think you'll find this episode interesting and certainly food for thought. Thank you as always for tuning in and for your reviews and your feedback and your DMs on Instagram. My books are available widely. They're Owning It, The Confidence Kit and Naked. And if you search Mally Coyne's name, you'll find her book Love In, Love Out, which is a compassionate guide to parenting your anxious child. And it's brilliant. So for parents, that's a must read. And yeah, that's it. So enjoy the episode. Mally, thank you so much for coming back to me on Owning It, the Anxiety Podcast. You're a busy woman. I'm so thrilled to have you. So first of all, welcome back.
Thank you so much, Caroline. It's great to be here.
Today, we're going to talk about something that sounds maybe a little bit bizarre, but I think is really common, maybe without people even realizing it. Certainly something I've experienced myself. And it's kind of, I suppose, to put a word on it, like happiness anxiety.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. That's it's something maybe some people may not have heard of. And then for others, they might very much recognize this in themselves.
Yeah. So when we were both looking into it, there is a word, cherophobia, for people who have this aversion to happiness because they feel that, you know, something bad is going to happen. And that's probably that seems like quite a stretch to give it a phobia term. But I think lots of us in daily life just have this slight anxiety where, you know, when things are going well, we feel that we don't deserve it or that something's got to go wrong. Why is that? Why do we have this fear? Let's just get straight into it.
Yeah, so I suppose cherophobia is a translation. Chiro or chero is the Greek term for to rejoice. Yeah. So a phobia means fear. So it's a fear of rejoicing. So really the kind of symptoms of it would be believing that feeling happy makes you a bad person, believing that being happy will lead to something bad happening, believing that you should not express happiness in case it upsets others. So I suppose that would result in certain behaviors would be like avoidance of joyful social gatherings, rejecting relationships or life opportunities that may bring happiness and success. And again, just like with any other kind of condition or phobia, that it can affect people in milder ways where, you know, they have an occasional feeling like this. And then for other people, when I was kind of researching into it and looking into it more, it can actually stem from trauma earlier on in life and be something much more serious. But generally speaking, it's part of, like, it's not actually in the diagnostic and statistical manual of mental disorders, which is how psychologists and psychiatrists would usually classify conditions. Yeah. It's not written in there as a phobia. So it's kind of in its infancy in terms of research that's being done on it. So you won't find a hell of a lot on it, actually.
Yeah. And I don't want people to listen to this and then panic thinking, oh God, like I have this. This is another thing that I have to deal with. I don't want to put those labels on people. I just want to explore the idea that sometimes when life is going well for a lot of people, we can feel a little bit of anxiety rising or a lot where we feel, and I get this all the time, where my mind, for example, will just go to something like sinister. So when good fortune takes a sinister turn in your mind and you get suspicious of the good fortune that you have, or you feel that, oh no, this is too good to be true, or life is too good. And I had this really horribly common thought, and I'm sure it's common to a lot of people, where if it hasn't happened much throughout COVID, but like if Barry was out and he said he was on the way home from work and he didn't come home when I kind of thought he would, and even if it's like 10 minutes longer than I'd expect him, my rational mind is like, he's stuck in traffic, but the little bit of anxiety is like, you are too lucky to have Barry, your house, you know, now your baby. So he's lying in a ditch somewhere. And that's how it manifests for me, where I think something terrible is going to go wrong, because that's just what life would do because I have it too good. And I would say that's a very common and really annoying thing to deal with when things are finally going good and right and you just want to enjoy that.
Yeah, absolutely, Caroline. And I think, you know, it's also symptomatic of a more anxious mind. And, you know, you and I have more anxious minds. We've both written books on anxiety. I think we know about it at this stage. And about 15% of people have a more anxious disposition from birth even. So I think, you know, as you know, if you're looking at anxiety, you're looking at somebody's thoughts and their thought processes. And this could be one of the patterns of thoughts that could come from having, you know, a more anxious mind. You know, what goes up must come down. After happiness, there must come a fall. Sometimes it can also be to do with like protecting yourself. So it's like, you know, if you have a thought of, well, something's going to go bad now after this, it's almost like protecting yourself against feeling that happiness so that you're not going to have this big fall or drop. Because I suppose we all know that feelings are they're transient, and they kind of, you know, go up, they go down. And maybe it's like a way of protecting ourselves, but it is part and parcel of a more anxious mind that you would have more these types of catastrophic patterns of thought sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, like I'm obviously well able to identify, okay, that's just, you've gone into catastrophic thinking there, because I'm, you know, aware of it. I've obviously, both of us are very deep into the subject, and I can catch myself and say, okay, let's bring that back a bit. But I guess some people can really fall into those thinking pitfalls where they could end up in quite an anxious spiral. And I guess that is anxiety really in a nutshell, is like, the potential for things to go wrong, future oriented, based on conjecture, not actually based on fact. And yeah, I think it's probably a lot more pervasive than we realize, where people feel, like you say, they need to protect themselves against things going wrong. And I mean, there's so much that we could talk about here. I want to talk about gratitude, because I feel sometimes that gratitude can go against me, in that I become so grateful and so appreciative of what I have that I, like, again, it goes into that, it just flips a coin and goes into that, oh shit, like I'm too fortunate, you know, I'm healthy, my parents are healthy, I don't deserve this. Mm-hmm. And the practicing gratitude ends up making me feel a bit panicked. Not all the time, but it's sometimes I can lose myself in gratitude, and it becomes something that is then not helpful.
Okay, so like practicing gratitude for you, which obviously is known to be a really good kind of technique for people, you know, to kind of be conscious of the good things in their lives, makes you more conscious of those good things, and then gives you that fear of something possibly going wrong in the future.
Yeah, just the worry that it will be taken away from you. Or, you know, I also think like in society, and certainly in Ireland where we are, there's quite a tendency towards like misery and like misery porn and the negative. And we maybe when we have conversations publicly, it's like, oh, did you hear this terrible thing happened and this poor thing happened? And it's almost like more societally maybe acceptable to have things be kind of on the downward spiral for you. Whereas do we respond? Is part of my anxiety here a fear that people will think, oh, well, she has it too good, you know, that kind of way, she doesn't deserve it? Or like, is it more, I feel like it's easier to go into a conversation when you can say something shit happened, to be quite honest. People are more responsive to that.
Yeah, totally. As you say, vulnerability breeds this kind of human connection. People connect on that level because immediately they can kind of see something similar in themselves. I mean, one of the reasons for this charophobia or fear of happiness is, and they've done some research, a lot of it is qualitative, which means that it's to do with people on, you know, where they ask them questions, yeah, rather than big quantitative studies with big massive numbers. But some people believe that being happy can make someone worse in terms of both morally and otherwise. So one example is that people may fear happiness because they would feel guilty if they were to attain it. That is, they may feel like morally bad people because they know others are suffering.
Yeah.
Or else, you know, culturally, they feel that, you know, expressing happiness should be avoided because of its potentially negative consequences for both them in terms of how they're perceived and also those around them. So kind of what you described there.
And that's terrible because, I mean, our goal, everyone's goal, like all the books we read, everything we do, we're driven by this desire to like achieve balance and feel happy and content and grateful. And, you know, what's the point if we get there and we feel like it's, you know, we have to be quiet about it? It's almost like I've talked about it before, like with confidence, you almost don't want to show that you're confident in case it comes across as arrogance, in case, you know, people say, oh, isn't she great there with things got working out for her? You know, it's kind of going against the drive that we all have.
Yeah, I agree with you, Caroline. I mean, I think, you know, it's a cultural thing as well. If you were to look in America, say, where I think people are much more kind of open about saying, oh, look, I won this award, or check me out, I've published this book or whatever, you know, like I'm doing well in my job. And, you know, that it's, I don't know, it's kind of more culturally acceptable, yeah, in a way. And then you have the Eastern cultures, because it's actually really interesting to look at the different cultures where, say, our Western culture values happiness, which is more associated with individualism, whereas the Eastern cultures, and this is where some of the studies have been done, you know, they have found that, like, say, in Russia, they said that individuals are often hesitant about pursuing or demonstrating happiness or success because of the belief in the evil eye, the idea that visible success can lead to envy or suspicion from others, leading to the ultimate misfortune and unhappiness for the individual. But I think in Ireland, I mean, the word that comes to mind is begrudgery. And I don't mean to be like, yeah, I know, you see, I'm half Dutch, half Irish, so I can kind of, and I haven't lived in Ireland all my life, only since I was 18, but I kind of know that culturally, you know, even like, you do hear of people saying and begrudging people on social media who are saying, who are like, every post is like how wonderful, yeah, they're doing. And even with me, I suppose when I came out with my book, and I'm sure you were the same, Caroline, with that, and even with, you know, kind of the success of your podcast and the, you know, different bits and pieces, you know, even like wanting to post about your baby or your family or whatever, something amazing that's happened, you are conscious, aren't you, of how you would be perceived?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think social comparison obviously is such a big reason why we might develop this fear of happiness, because of what people will think about us. So that's another, I mean, social comparison is another major driver of anxiety. I want to ask you about the feeling of deserving. And I guess that probably goes back maybe to something more deeper. But, you know, when someone tells you like, oh, this person and she had this terrible thing happened, and then, and like, it's so much misfortune. It's so like, how can one person have been dealt that hand? And then me, as like a generally very happy, contented, grateful person with, you know, my health and everything, I'm like, I just end up feeling this massive guilt of like that the distribution of happiness and good fortune seems to be so unfair sometimes. And that's when it can turn again. And so I want to like unpack that if we can. If I was a client sitting in front of you now, like, what do you think? How would we approach this?
Well, in that situation, I'd see it as, you know, like people who have empathy and who have compassion towards others have a kind of a sensitivity to the needs of others. And I suppose if you look on the news any night, if you look at the situation, you know, any situation in the world, and you kind of see how happiness and fortune are completely unfairly distributed. And it really, like, for some more than others, it hits them more than others. And then in terms of a client that would come into me and say they don't deserve happiness, I think one really important thing to kind of focus on is there's like this fear of emotion sometimes, where individuals have anxiety about intense emotions because they fear they will lose control over their emotions or the behavioral reactions to those emotions. So in one article I was reading, a woman who had suffered domestic violence, when she was younger with a different partner. And, you know, she said, he was cruelest to me when I was kind to him or vulnerable with him. So the abuse had rocked her view of everything, including, you know, how she felt about the world, her worldview. When your worldview is rocked by some trauma, it suddenly kind of shifts your worldview. And now happiness and danger felt inextricably linked, you know. So she was afraid that if she let herself go, because happiness, in a way, when you think of any big emotion, be it happiness or sadness or any big emotion, you are kind of leaving yourself vulnerable.
Yeah.
Because you're sharing that with someone else, be it with another person or social media, whatever. And you're sharing that, and you're putting yourself in a way at risk of maybe something negative happening, you know. So you kind of want to protect yourself by not feeling, because previously you've had many experiences maybe of joy that were soon followed by something really dangerous and negative.
Yeah, I mean, it really is like with happiness, when you think about the emotion of happiness, requires you to let go and to, like you say, it sounds jarring, but to be vulnerable and to be carefree and to allow yourself to be happy. And that opens you up then to, like you say, what goes up must come down. So I guess some people, maybe myself included, end up finding a bit of comfort in discomfort, because that's something you could be familiar with. Whether for me, it's just being, you know, almost comfortable or familiar in an anxious state, I suppose. Or for someone else, like you say, that person, like, more comfortable in a more negative environment because that's her point of reference.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. And then you also have other people that would come into me and say, like, say I practice a lot of compassion focused therapy, where you have three emotional circles. One is threat, one is drive, one is soothing. And I suppose you have to, you know, we all threat, that's where anxiety comes into play, or danger or trauma or dangerous situations you might have been in. And soothing is what you want to work on in the therapy room to help to counterbalance the threat response. And the soothing circle is all about, you know, self-compassion towards yourself, being kind to yourself, connection with other people, and kind of having a routine of self-care, you know, activities or things that you do to make yourself feel more balanced, not necessarily to feel good, but to feel balanced in your life. It's not all about kind of pursuing happiness. And I have found with people that, you know, I say, can you draw your soothing circle? And they're like, I can't, I can't even begin to do that. I don't even know what soothes me. I don't know what makes me feel good. I don't know what makes me feel like time hasn't passed. You know, I don't know about pleasurable activities. And then you might have people with low self-esteem, where really low self-esteem, where they feel like genuinely that they don't deserve good things to happen to them, because maybe, you know, it goes back to their earliest relationships where, you know, they felt like maybe they watched a parent, an abusive situation with a parent, or else they felt like they didn't deserve happiness. And so therefore, because I've worked with the Recovery College in Galway, for instance, and I've had people on saying, I didn't even know I was allowed to do things for myself. Do you know, like grown, you know, people with mental health issues who don't you know, realize that that was an okay thing to do, that it wasn't a selfish thing to do. And again, it does, sometimes people feel that self-compassion is all about, you know, indulging yourself and, you know, lying there, you know, having baths and eating chocolate all the time. It's not at all. Like, it's actually quite a tough thing to do for many people. And it is about accountability. It's not just about joy all the time and happiness. So I think those are important things to consider for people with more, you know, that where cherophobia, this fear of happiness, is part of a greater issue of low self-esteem and difficulties growing up.
Okay. Or the other potential that you say is like, just if you have a predisposition or you're just prone to being a bit more of an anxious thinker like me, then maybe, you know, you're likely fall into those traps of thinking where you feel, you know, so grateful and it can go against you that you're like, oh, you know, something's got to go wrong. So what can we do in those instances where, you know, I'm like sitting at home and I'm just thinking, wow, I'm so lucky. Like, we got so lucky with our baby and our house. And like, I mean, it's small. It's the small things that are the big things, you know. It's not like, oh, you've got a million in the bank. It's like the appreciation, especially after COVID, of having your health or your parents having their health, or, you know, things like that you might have taken for granted before. And now when you think about those things, like I get an anxiety around, you know, I guess it's so many different kinds of anxieties coming into one, but like, you know, when my parents call me now, like sometimes my mind will instantly go, are they going to tell me something is wrong with them? Mm. Or, you know, is, you know, it just immediately going to that catastrophic place because you're just so grateful and appreciative for what you have. So what can we do in those moments? How can I, or someone listening, I guess, pause and redirect themselves and allow themselves to be, that they deserve to be happy and it's okay?
Yeah, I suppose it's just, Caroline, it's like an acknowledgement of the, I suppose, tapestry of emotions that we all have in life, and that, you know, that like we're all deserving of moments of joy, and we all get more crappier moments, and that's just part of life, you know. And if you look at it, if you look at it as a phobia, then you're kind of seeing it as, it's almost like it's a fear of something happening in the future. So it stands to reason then that you're kind of treating it like you would any other phobia. I mean, firstly, things like anything that you can do to bring yourself into the present and to accept your emotions as they are, to accept your thought, even to kind of like, you know, be conscious, like, I'm having this thought at the moment, may I be kind to myself in this moment? Do you know, it's okay to have a thought like this, and it's okay to feel as I do, and I'm not alone in that. That's the common humanity angle of it. But mindfulness, any type of relaxation or mindfulness that brings you into the present moment in your daily life, whether that be, you know, actually doing a mindfulness, you know, like, you know, practicing mindfulness in like a relaxation activity, or actually doing things like, you know, habit stacking, which is like when you're brushing your teeth, that you would remain in the present moment rather than be doing something else. Or when you're making yourself a cup of tea, a parent came up with a really good example yesterday in a group I was running of having like a sticker on the somewhere near the kettle to kind of remind herself to kind of be in the present moment as she's boiling her kettle, as opposed to trying to do a million things. So anything that can bring you into the present is going to help. And it can be whatever, you know, it can be going for a walk, it can be journaling, you know, any type of physical exercise. And then as for any other phobia, Caroline, you know yourself, you know, your exposure therapy, you know, when we have a fear of spiders, we are dogs or something like that, it's kind of our flying, you gently expose somebody to their fear by direct and repeated exposure, bit by bit. And then I suppose your body and your brain get desensitized to this object of our situation that you fear. And then you realize, I suppose, your brain and your body realize that this is not something that's going to you know, harm you in any way. So I suppose gradual exposure to joy evoking situations may help to lessen the anxiety toward happiness.
Hi, This is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Okay. And then, you know, if you're sitting there in the moment and you're thinking, oh, like, something's bad is going to happen. This is where I struggle sometimes with like mindfulness and being in the moment, because you want to get away from the moment. But I think it's, you have to be able to say, okay, well, let's like tease this apart. Like, where is this thought coming from? The exercise I always go back to, which you taught me, was the factor opinion, you know, which is, yeah, I think the most helpful thing you could possibly have in your back pocket to say, well, what is this based on? What evidence is there to support that this is true?
Yeah.
And that always kind of helps to calm me down. And I suppose like there's working on the catastrophic thinking, but there's also working on the guilt that you feel, you know, for having a good life and for having things working out. When you'll hear of someone who had completely everything go wrong, that's another thing. I guess it's not really anxiety. It's a guilt is such a like powerful but kind of wasted emotion sometimes, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It is. But I think if you were to kind of look at it as, you know, that you're a compassionate person and that you're concerned about other people, and if you are feeling in, you know, a particular way, that can drive you to action. Do you know what I mean? It could drive you to, oh, I really want to help somebody, or I want to do something for somebody, you know, and acknowledging that we all feel guilt. It's just part of our threat focused brain. And as you said, the bringing the thought to trial, I think it's really important to kind of distinguish between realistic worrying and unrealistic worrying. And like, I do have a fear myself. Like, I still have both my parents alive, and I keep thinking, oh, it's, you know, I better prepare myself now. It could happen, you know, that they're, one of them is going to pass, and how am I going to, you know, it's almost like I'm rehearsing how I would feel for when it happens so that it doesn't hit me as bad. But I know it's going to hit me terribly. But that's driving me to action, which is like, well, I know now that I want to, like, you know, ring them as often as I can, or, you know, to appreciate the moments that I have with them. So if it can drive you to some sort of action, but knowing that you're not going to be able to solve the, you know, starvation issues in another, somewhere else in the world, or you're not going to be able to solve all the world's problems. But I think one of the most useful things is that to know that you're not alone in how you feel, that lots of people have this fear at different instances in their lives, maybe particularly when things are going well, and there's many different reasons for it, and it's only in its infancy, and I think we'll find out a lot more about it as the years progress. But that it's okay to feel as you do, and it's okay, and to maybe, as you said, identify how realistic the thought is or not. And then you can kind of, like, if it's not a realistic thought, you can almost, like, you're putting your thought to trial, almost like it's up there in the jury or in the dock, and you're kind of asking it questions about, you know, how realistic is this or not, you know?
And what about saying things or writing down, you know, mantras or statements like, I am worthy of the cards that I've been dealt. I am worthy of happiness. I am worthy of good fortune. You know, how helpful do you think that is for someone to really let that sink in, that, well, we're all worthy of it. And if we've been dealt a good hand, and obviously everything is transient, you know, like if life is good right now, to like just enjoy it and appreciate it, how helpful do you think it is? Well, what's the word I'm looking for? Not a statement, a
mantra.
Mantra, yeah. Or there's another word I think as well.
Affirmation,
that's the one. Do you think that they would be useful in just reminding people that, you know, we're all deserving of, if things are good, it's okay. You don't need to think it's all going to immediately fall apart, and you're allowed to enjoy it, believe it or not.
Yeah, I mean, I think mantras and affirmations really work for some people. You know, you can kind of just write a few down, three down right now, you know, something that will work for you. You know, I use myself before a kind of a stress inducing situation, I'll be like, you can do this, Mally, you know, go get them, you know, kind of thing. Like, you know, this is, you know, this is okay, you can do it, like, you know. I think they can really work for people to actually repeat those to themselves. I think they're really useful to do that. And maybe even, you know, journaling, putting your fears and anxieties down on paper can help as well, because sometimes when we're anxious, it's like our brains just get full of, our focus actually gets very, you know, kind of reduced, and our perspective reduces. So the second you feel that anxiety coming on, or that, you know, that you can actually, you know, increase your focus by standing up out of your chair and maybe looking out at the horizon, giving yourself two deep breaths in through your nose and a big deep breath out through your mouth, and just kind of, and knowing, as you said, it's transient, Caroline. It's like right now things might be going okay, but no doubt you've had difficulties in your past, and you've had moments that are absolutely really, really difficult for you. And, you know, like, I suppose it's about trying to be in the moment if we can. But if you have, if this is a big difficulty for you, and it's kind of part of another difficulty to do with like feeling not deserving of happiness, and this is something that you experience a lot, I certainly would go to your GP or talk to somebody about it, you know, a professional, or else a friend or somebody you trust, because it could be part of a bigger issue and that you might just want to get some help with.
Somewhere that I'm hoping it will be really useful for people listening is to have just maybe a little bit more awareness of whether they're, you know, sometimes falling into this trap, which means that they're denying themselves of good things in their life, or they're not allowing themselves to enjoy, you know, the moments of pleasure, is in relationships. When I think we all know people who meet someone, things are going good, and maybe because they've been, you know, burned before in a relationship, they just have this self-destruct button, and they're afraid to let themselves go into something that's positive, and they maybe create things, that blocks there that didn't exist in case it doesn't work out, and they're protecting themselves against it doesn't work out. And I think a lot of people could maybe do that without being aware at all. Like, they think it's to do with something, you know, insignificant. And actually, if you step back and took a helicopter approach, and you'd be like, this is a pattern that someone might have where they just go into self-destruct mode because they're afraid of it not working out.
Well, I mean, it's like, I'm really glad you brought up that point, Caroline, because it's, you know, self-sabotage is something that comes to mind. And, you know, the way we are in relationship is all to do with our attachment style. And like, I have recognized myself situations, I remember like many years ago when I was with my now husband, where, you know, things were going really well. And then next thing, you know, he'd have a flatmate move in and I'd be like, oh, you like her. And I'd be creating this drama saying, oh, you fancy her, even though there was no evidence to suggest that that was the case. But it was because for me, I was just feeling like maybe that I wasn't deserving of this going well, or could he really like me as much as he says he does? Is this for real? And just almost causing a drama, because some of us sometimes in life, if we're used to drama as kids, we're used to that level of kind of, you know, conflict and issues. And therefore, it's almost like we recreate those in our relationships. And it's a form of self-sabotage. And, you know, like, I think it happens in so many different relationships out there. I think so many people will recognize themselves in that, where it's almost like you're creating a situation where you want the person to come back and say, no, I do really want to be with you, or whatever. And, you know, I think it takes somebody getting really comfortable in a relationship and trusting and believing for that to kind of dissipate, and probably doing some work on yourself, to be honest.
And is there anything you would suggest for how people may be able to identify if they have that self-sabotage or that self-destruct button within them?
I think if you just keep recognizing, if it's about kind of taking a step back and trying to figure out, like, you know, it's the same as taking the thought to trial, what we talked about a second ago. It's like, do I have evidence to believe that my partner fancies someone else, or that this situation happened? Do I actually have, you know, hard evidence to believe that or not? Or is this symptomatic of me not feeling great about myself, or me not feeling deserving of this going well? If patterns arise over and over again, and this happens so much in relationships, and I'm really glad you brought it up. If patterns arise over and over again, you kind of know that it's something you can look up. There's many things online that talk about your attachment style, and basically your attachment is all about the, you know, it's determined in a way by your first relationships when you're born, and how you were minded as you were when you were very young, which is when your brain in the first 3 years of life has, you know, creates the most brain connections. And then as you grow older, it's like you develop patterns of relationships that kind of mimic what you experienced when you were younger. And in relationship, these things can come up, because in relationship, aren't you at your most vulnerable?
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess, I mean, just mentioning the word vulnerable there, it does come back to a fear of vulnerability. Like, happiness is being vulnerable. Being in a happy relationship means, you know, even though I'm and you are married, and, you know, we have our house, and it seems like you've, you know, set yourself up for life, we're still vulnerable that at any moment or anything could come along and, you know, throw it off. And that's the risk you take when you go into a relationship. And it is a risk, and maybe your threat system for someone else maybe is quite turned on to be like, hold on, I've seen this before. I got to get myself out of this before it can happen to me.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's the fear of vulnerability that is probably a lot at the root of this happiness anxiety, which we're really just speculating about, I guess, because, like, as you said, there's so little about it at the moment.
And I think it's also related, Caroline, I think you've done a podcast on this before about imposter syndrome. Do you know, this idea of, like, you know, you can have all the accolades in the world, but if you don't feel good within yourself, or if you don't feel confident or, you know, kind of worthy within yourself, all of that doesn't matter. Damn, it really doesn't. Like, you could have it all. And in fact, you probably can feel worse having accolades and people saying, oh, well done for this, or that's great, or whatever. And if you just feel a bit kind of empty inside,
yeah,
self-worth and self-confidence and how we feel within ourselves is, shouldn't, ideally, it shouldn't be dependent on every last thing we did, because otherwise, if we're having a crappy day, or if something doesn't go well, then, you know, our worthiness is going to plummet. It's about, we're trying to develop kind of more steady sense of self that isn't reliant on the last rating we got, or the last, you know, on, it's not dependent on external kind of validation, that it's dependent on your own validation for yourself.
That's such a hard one, isn't it? I mean, that's like, yeah, everyone's life work, yeah, is to take it from external validation to, you know, in the internal. And it's like a mountain to climb, really, isn't it?
It is a mountain to climb, but I think, you know, and I think it's an age thing as well. I mean, like, I am halfway to 90, as my kids tell me,
oh,
all the time. They're so mean. And I think, you know, there is a more of a culture now where, like, you know, there's more in Western culture, maybe with social media and everything, there's more. And I look at really young people, and I think validation is coming more from the outside. And that's how, you know, they kind of judge and measure themselves against other people. And that's really important to them. That's an age thing. I mean, it's always been that way, that, you know, say teenagers are more concerned with how their peers view them and all of that.
Yeah.
But I think it's about, you know, they say true self-care is about choosing a life you do not need to escape from, and you choosing. And also, I think what's really important is if you have awareness of what makes you feel more grounded in yourself. Not, I'm not saying happy. I'm saying grounded, balanced. I'm kind of a bit of, like, I have a bit of an aversion to the word happiness, because I
Me
know
too.
It's transient, you know?
Yeah. It's more contentment, I think, is the goal. Yeah. Really. Yeah. Just feeling at ease and balanced. And I saw this beautiful quote that I shared. It's when you no longer, and it's obviously transient, but when you no longer feel the need to change your state, you've no desire for your state to change. That's kind of what happiness, if you want to use that word, is. And of course, that's something that's fleeting and it's kind of come in and out of your life all the time. But I think in general, I mean, I think it would be great to leave people with some parting wisdom from you, the expert, the clinical psychologist and the best-selling author, around if people are feeling, realizing, listening to this, wow, like I actually do think I get anxious about being happy because I don't feel I deserve it, or I think something's bad's going to happen, or I, you know, end up thinking I catastrophize. What thoughts can we leave those people with? What actions can we suggest that they take just to help maybe feel a little bit more like it, they can get on top of it, or it's not going to, you know, suck them in and take over? And also, I really like to reiterate, I don't want people to be frightened and think, oh, geez, I have another bloody diagnosis here to give myself. Like, that's not the case at all. It's just a little element of anxiety that can creep in for some people. And obviously for some people, it can be quite destructive. But let's hope that for people listening, it's more like what I'm describing here, where you think, oh, someone hasn't come home yet, maybe something's gone wrong, which I'm sure is common to so many of us.
Yeah. I think that's why I would say, firstly, I'd say you're not alone. I mean, obviously we're talking about it, so you're not alone. And, you know, I did see a really good article. One of the best ones I read was positivepsychology.com/cherophobia. And it was by a lady called Jessica, something I remember now. Jessica Swainston. That was like, it was a really good article that I read about it. But what I want to say is you're not alone in how you feel. And also that it's like, it's important, I think, to explore where it might be coming from for you. So whilst it mightn't be a huge issue for you in your life, but you recognize patterns of it, say, be it in your work life or in your relationships or within yourself, exploring where it comes from. So like we spoke today about how it might be part of a greater underlying anxiety and of catastrophic thinking that you might have sometimes, or that it might be something to do with an earlier trauma, might be something to do with, you know, attachment style and how it might occur more in relationships, or it might occur more in work where you feel like an imposter for doing well, or it might occur more, you know, it might be more like something that you're afraid to show in public to other people, to whether it be, you know, to your friends and family or on social media. And just, I think, as you said, you know, you kind of talk about, you know, assess and address, don't you? And kind of the helicopter technique and kind of looking at where is this coming from, and then trying to figure out, I think the most important thing as a psychologist, I'm always going to say to you that trying to figure out where it's coming from is a really important thing to do. And if you can do that yourself, great, through journaling or, you know, thinking about it, talking to a friend. If you need more help with that and you feel like it's more symptomatic of something bigger, talking to a professional about that. And then, you know, knowing you're not alone and using these techniques, like trying to remain more in the present, and taking your thought to trial, what we were talking about, and exposing yourself very in small bouts to little moments of joy. I think, you know, kind of, you know, letting yourself feel that discomfort, because that's what fear is. It's discomfort. And, you know, letting yourself feel that in very small bits, you know. But I think the most important thing is if you're feeling it, trying to explore where that might be coming from, how debilitating is it for you, and what kind of level of support you may need for yourself. But most of all, knowing you're not alone and being kind to yourself in that moment. And I think we were talking there about it, the one of the most important things you can have, you know, growing up as an adult and as you get older, is like a box of tools that you can use that make you feel more balanced, you know. So, you know, whilst for somebody it might be an affirmation or a mantra that they use in times of stress, for somebody else it might be, I know that, you know, getting up and going for a walk is going to help you, or somebody else picking up the phone to a friend is going to help you. Trying to figure out what are the bits, what are the things that make you feel more balanced in your life, and that the pursuit of happiness is not, it's not all about being happy. Life isn't about being happy. Life is about all the different feelings. And I kind of feel like, I kind of think like when you've had kind of more shitty moments, you can appreciate the the other ones more sometimes, do you know?
Yeah. And I also, I mean, everything you said there is so spot on. I really liked what you said as well about just how you perceive, you know, if you have these kind of thoughts, which I do sometimes, you know, you don't necessarily need to panic about it, but you can also flip it and acknowledge that, well, maybe I think this way because I am so grateful, because I don't take my life for granted.
Yeah.
Or because I have a great capacity to feel empathy. Yeah. And, you know, concern for others, and they're good things. Like, you don't want to stamp that part of you out.
Absolutely not. And I think, you know, that's why I kind of talk about the superpowers of anxious children, you know, in my book as well. And just generally speaking, the superpowers of people who are that bit more anxious are because you have this awareness of the world and this sensitivity to those around you. That's just incredible. You know, like, so I think it's we don't want to stamp that out of somebody. We just want to hone it. We want to kind of, like, you know, like, not let it affect your life in a very negative way. We just want to kind of help you to cope with those moments when you can. So, Caroline, can I ask you a question back?
Yeah.
What would help you most when you have those feelings?
I think for me, it would be a combination of just slowing down and bringing my kind of more rational brain on the scene and saying, look, you know, what evidence is there to support this catastrophe you've just created in your mind? So, like, dealing with those thoughts in that moment, but then also trying to work on my core beliefs about myself, or, you know, the more kind of foundational element of I am worthy. We're all worthy. We're all deserving of good things. And you've also, you know, you've worked hard to create the life that you have, and just trying to like work on that thought that, like, oh, well, I'm too lucky. It's got to go wrong. I think that would be for me. And that's why I was really interested to have this conversation, because I do think it's, you can just kind of slip into this trap all the time. So, yeah. So whether it's like a combination of those, like the CBT exercise with a bit of the affirmations or a bit of journaling, or also, like you say, like, we're just reversing it and thinking, no, like, this, you know, this, like, maybe this is my superpower.
Absolutely. And then a call to action. If you kind of feel like, I'm, you know, like me, if I feel like, oh, I'm so lucky to have my parents still, well, I'll just text one of them now and just kind of say, I love you, you know, and, you know, just kind of, yeah, just that can be helpful as well.
I'm going to go call my parents now and tell them I love them.
Do. Everybody should pick up the phone to somebody now and tell them they love them.
Oh, if that's what people do as a response to this episode, I think that's an amazing achievement. So, Mally Coyne, thank you so much for giving me your time and your expertise, and for just unpacking this topic with me, which I know is still, like you say, in its infancy. So we don't have a whole lot of research to go on, but I really enjoyed our conversation.
Me too, Caroline. It's always lovely to be on with you, and well done on all your work.
Thank you so much.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
The easiest way to access Owning It Real Time is to head to the link in the episode description or episode details, whatever you call them, show notes. You will find the link in there at the top. You can sign up right away for Owning It Real Time and access the full library of 10 situation-specific audio guides that will help you own your anxiety even more than you've ever done before.